and welcome to the Cigar Cast, your weekly one-stop shop for all things cigar-related, including industry news, reviews, and everything in between. We're recording live from Crown Cigars and Ales here in beautiful Brentwood, Tennessee. I'm one of your hosts, Trey Debman. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Mr. Shane Reeves.
You know what I realized on the way up here tonight?
Was it that I forgot to take my cigar out of the cellophane, so now I'm going to have to try and do it so the mics don't pick it up?
No, I'm used to that. I realize that I am at the height of my powers. Have you ever stopped and thought, because you always hear people say, when I was at the height of my powers, or so-and-so is at the height of their powers. Have you ever just decided at a certain point you're at the height of your powers?
You know, I don't think that's a train of thought that I have ever had leave the station.
But is it a self-esteem issue? Is it an ego issue?
I mean, I think it's an ego issue on your part.
My high ego?
Yeah, I think I'm more inclined to believe the latter.
Well, I came within an ace of just buying a really nice Padron, because I said, well, I'm at the height of my powers. I should smoke a really nice Padron. But I decided instead that I was going to buy an At Sneaky Toshka.
Well, before you get into that, why do you believe that you're at the height of your powers?
Passing on several. I've got beautiful big deer walking by, and no, don't want to shoot that one. I'm waiting on the big one. Business is rolling. Absolutely blowing
just
and
everything's
going.
Coming up, Shane.
Everything's going my way. Got a beautiful wife. Got wonderful house. Got a decent dog. I mean, everything's just going my way.
Then one day you'll ask yourself, this isn't my house.
What happened? But no, so anyway, I feel like I'm at the height of my powers right now. So folks, this is as good as it's going to get. Welcome.
And to celebrate, it's At Sneaky Night.
To celebrate? Well, I guess I will impact my own ego somewhat. I have been waiting for 2 years about to smoke an At Sneaky on this show.
Because we've been trying like the Dickens to get him on the show.
Right. Short of kidnapping and putting a head bag on Charles and bringing him in here, strapping him to a chair and pulling the bag off and there being a microphone in front of him, I don't think we're going to get him on the show.
That's a man that lives by his own schedule.
Well, he's got like 6 kids. Well, so that's a big part of it is it's hard for him to do anything in the evenings, and it's hard for you and I to do stuff through the day because we have, you know, regular jobs.
Right.
So, but anyway, regardless, I'm smoking the new At Sneaky, the Toshka.
This just came out a couple of months ago.
It did. It's the first one in a Toro. So it's as close to the size I like as any cigar that he's made. It's a 6x52. It's a San Andreas wrapper. It's Nicaraguan binders and fillers. I'm looking forward to it. I've not smoked this one. I've smoked the Nanaya, and I really liked it, other than the fact that it was just enough to make me want a cigar.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to lighting this cigar up and trying it.
Excellent. Well, so the cigar I'm smoking tonight is proof that sometimes money spent on marketing is money well spent. I was in the humidor earlier with not a clue what I wanted to smoke, and I walked by and I see the new craft series from Viaje. Now, you and I are not huge Viaje fans, and I really couldn't tell you of any of their cigars that I've smoked. They're just never really done much for me. However, this one is the newest in their installment of the craft series called Wilshire and La Jolla. Now, I don't think we've ever really talked about it on the show, but you and I have talked before. Every morning I listen to the Kevin and Bean show on K-Rock out of L.A. It's a little morning zoo radio show. It's the best morning radio show in the country as far as I'm concerned. Well, so having daily inundation with all things regional to L.A. and pop culture, when I saw Wilshire and La Jolla, I immediately kind of gravitated toward this. So I picked one up without even looking up anything about it. That being said, I have since done so and found out that this is Nicaraguan binder, filler, and wrapper. So not too bad. Country of origin, Honduras. Not really sure how they pulled that off, but okay.
Well, Nicaraguan and Honduras are so close together, they could just put it on a donkey and haul it across the border and have somebody wrap
it. I think what that comes down to is that this was made at the factory, the Raices Cubanas, okay, which is a Honduran factory. So I think, you know, it uses tobacco from Nicaragua, but it was made in Honduras. I have no expectations. It's a 6x54 box press Toro. So it doesn't really look that box press, though. I mean, when it was sitting in the humidor, I really didn't notice that it was a box press. So I don't think this is going to come under my ire for that reason at all.
So this is the one that has the silver wrapper on the back end of it.
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, what surprised me is that it's actually on the top end. It actually covers the head of the cigar, not the foot. So when I pulled it out, and it's got a bit of a shaggy foot, too. So I pulled it out, and I had to do a double take to figure out which side to cut and light.
Interesting. It's interesting that
is it really?
Well, sorry. At a moment.
You really undermine yourself when you say interesting through a yawn.
Through a yawn, I know. It was one of those nights. Okay, so while you light your cigar, I really don't have nothing good to say about Viaje. So, and I really want to be positive. I mean, I want to be nice. I want to give, you know, everybody smoke the cigar you enjoy. But Viaje, just, they're like Casa Fernandez. They're just not a brand that really does anything for me. Now, they're not as bad as Gurkha.
But, are we jumping right into that?
Oh, yeah. That's what you call a transition in the business. So, Maxim, last week, since we were at the Abbey and having our show there, we didn't get to talk about any news articles. Maxim Magazine, the best cigars to smoke after an epic Thanksgiving meal.
I really hate that you're making me go to the Maxim website on this computer. I'm going to have to sterilize it after this.
Well, just don't accept the cookies. At all. So, this happens ever so often. Is that CBD deodorant that they're showing on this Maxim ad? Or, anyway. Sorry, I got sidetracked. There's some guy walking a dog wearing CBD deodorant, and they're advertising it on Maximum. But can we just say Maxim?
If that gives you any indication of the lowbrow audience that reads Maxim, well, CBD deodorant.
Can we just say Maxim is for sale to the highest bidder? That they'll put anything, because this just reads like an ad for Gurkha and all. Because they feature the Gurkha Trienta and the Sindicato Particulares. Yeah, Particulares, which are both Gurkha brands.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we give... Their website is popping up ads all over the place. This is painful. It's like surfing the internet in the 90s. We give Aficionado a hard time about how a lot of their stuff goes to the highest bidder as well. So I really don't think we can fault Maxim for that practice, except for the fact that they've gotten in bed with Gurkha to execute on it.
Well, and so after, let's bypass this article totally. I'm going to go ahead and close this so it stops offending my delicate sensibilities. Bypass that article. What did you smoke after your Thanksgiving meal?
Well, I was about to say, let's not bypass the article. Let's bypass the content.
Yeah.
So I spent the holiday in Georgia with my soon-to-be in-laws. So there is no smoking happening. So I didn't get my first cigar post-Thanksgiving until Sunday when we got home. Yeah. And so, some of the bloom was off the rose from the, you know, there's nothing better.
Yeah, you don't still have turkey in your teeth at that point.
Exactly. But it was nice because I was able to, you know, come home, you know, and get relaxed. We came back on Saturday, so we still had Sunday to ourselves, didn't have to jump. Because I don't care how much you love your family or your in-laws or your extended family, whatever, it's always good to be home at least a day before you have to go back into your daily life. That extra day of just decompressing, being in your own bed, makes all the difference in the world. So that Sunday after we dropped Goose off with her mom, we went back to the Abbey and I got another Don Lino Africa.
Well, it's funny because we recorded that podcast on Tuesday, and that Friday I came and bought a box. I just went ahead and bought a box of Don Lito Africa, and nothing has been hitting my palate better than that cigar for the past week.
You know, and it was funny, too, because when I bought it and we sat down, especially for the price, at like $11 or something for the big one. So we sat down over at the Abbey, and I pulled it out, and I was explaining. I was like, you know, this cigar is a 7 all day long, but I was also in the perfect environment last week recording the show to receive a 7.
Right.
So I was curious to see if it held up to that on repeated smoking. Absolutely did.
Oh, yeah. It's more often than not when I open my humidor and ask myself the question, what cigar do I want? That's the cigar I want, regardless of whatever else. If, okay, well, I've smoked that 3 days in a row. do I really want to do it a fourth? Am I going to burn myself out? But at the end of the day, I say, what is the cigar I want? That's the cigar I want.
It is, and it is for me too. And you know, it's not cheap enough for me to be an everyday smoke, so I'm really having to hold back and make sure that I don't overwhelm my wallet and my palate with you know, burning out on that cigar.
Well, so after our Thanksgiving meal, we had, of course, the turkey and the ham and the hash brown casserole and all the hash brown casserole
for Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you don't make good dressing, you make hash brown casserole. And my mother makes wonderful dressing. My sister makes passable dressing. And I can't make dressing. I'm gonna have to invest time into dressing.
Oh.
Do you
play any role in the preparation of the Thanksgiving meal?
Oh yeah, almost totally.
Oh, okay.
And all the turkey, I got up at 4:30 in the morning and I put him on the smoker. I'd injected it the night before and gave it a good rub down, had my apple in there, slid it into there and really let it smoke slow. I took my ham and put it in my Dutch oven and sealed it up real good, slid it in there with the Traeger and just cooked nice and slow. And then I'd made my apples I always like to make my apples for my apple pie. I cooked them down a day or two before.
Give the cinnamon and all the spices a chance to really inject themselves into the flavor of the apples.
Yeah, really.
Now, are you
mature.
A Granny Smith guy? Or
I usually use a Fuji apple because I like it just a little bitter. I don't want too sweet an apple in my apple pie. So
I like a little bit not quite ripe Granny Smith because you get the sour.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason, I don't want a super sweet apple pie. I want it to have some tartness to it.
Yeah, if you use a Red Delicious, your pie is going to be too sweet.
Red Delicious are barely passable as apples and really only good to giving to horses that you don't like.
I wasn't aware that you were so offended by Red Delicious apples.
I think they are the most inappropriately named apple or maybe even food of all time because they are not delicious. They are disgusting.
Well, they are red.
They are red, but they are not delicious. Anyway, we've become cooking with Irma.
So coming back to it, and we had a friend over from the cigar shop and he went and had the girls, as is the tradition, we got finished cooking, and the girls all, before dessert, said, we're going to take the dog for a walk, which is always my cue for me and whatever gentlemen are present, we step on the back porch for a cigar, because I don't like to eat dessert right after the meal.
See, that's something that Noelle's family does, too, and that's so bizarre to me. I've always grown up where you eat, and then you eat dessert.
Oh, no, you take a little break. I mean, if it's dinner, obviously you're working on a timetable. But when it's lunch, when you're cooking it around, you know, lunchtime, you space it out. You know, they go take the dog for a walk. You sit down, you have a cigar, you relax, and you let your palate come around to dessert time.
I suppose, but I guess for me it's all about the cumulative experience.
But if
I had the opportunity to smoke a cigar between the meal and the dessert, I may change my tune.
Well, so
we're coming to your house for Thanksgiving next year.
By all means, you're always welcome. We went out on the back porch and we had a Cuban Bolivar and just really enjoyed
great stick.
Well, and it was the perfect size because I never want the 660 at that moment. I want the Rothschild, the Robusto. I do not want a big cigar.
And it's a torpedo as well.
Mm-hmm. So we sat down and we had that out on the back porch and really enjoyed ourselves. And just so let's get back to the physics of the Thanksgiving cigar. You've already had so much sweet. You've already had so much flavor. I don't think a super strong cigar is the way to go. I think you've got to go for something. That's why the Cuban cigar hits perfect, because Cuban tobacco by nature is going to be a little lighter.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of like you said about taking a break between the meal and the dessert. You give your palate a chance to rest. You know, you've just imbibed 14 pounds of some of the richest food that this country has to offer. You don't want to throw a LFD digger on top of that.
Right.
You want something that's going to elevate the experience and not overpower. And I think you're right. I think the Cuban cigar flavor profile complements that pretty well.
Yeah, I think the pacing of that. So that's one of my complaints with the article. Both the cigars that they featured were very, very full-bodied, super full-bodied cigars. I wouldn't want to eat them and then smoke them and then have an apple pie.
Yeah, no, the Sindicato is a very full-flavored, full-bodied cigar, as is the Partagas. Or no, that's not a Partagas. What is that?
That's the Gurkha Trienta.
Oh, they only offer... Oh, that is.
Yeah. So anyway, moving forward, let's talk about something fun. So we were at the Abbey last week over in East Nashville. I've never been there before. We're back at Crown this week.
Which I'm sure the listeners can tell by the background noise.
Sure. But from undeadwalking.com, Michael Cuditz to open a speakeasy in Nashville. Michael Cuditz is an actor in The Walking Dead.
One of the things I think is funny is I wish this had come out last week, because at that shop, they actually do a watch party every Sunday night. They are huge fans of this show over at that shop. Anybody local to the Nashville area has probably already heard that this speakeasy was coming. I think you and I have talked about it. I don't know if we did so on the show. There used to be a bar in Atlanta called Prohibition that was pretty much this exact model. Nothing but craft cocktails made with ingredients from the era or as close as can be procured at this day and age. Cigar smoking is allowed, but the real party piece of this whole thing is that you enter through a red London-style phone booth. They don't publish the phone number. The only way to get in is to know the phone number, which you dial on the phone, it rings inside, and then the whole back door of the phone booth opens and you go in that way. It's pretty cool.
Well, the part of this thing that I like the best, the dress code is very specific. Men cannot wear hats or athletic gears, and ladies don't wear distressed clothing or athletic gear either. So this is where you go and you are dressed as if you were a gentleman or a lady to enjoy a night on the town.
The one in Atlanta required a collared shirt.
See, I'm all for that. I'm all for a more elevated, because I don't want six chicks in yoga pants, you know, bouncing around. I like a gentleman's arrangement. You know, if you look around the bar here, everybody's pretty well regulated themselves. There's nobody in, you know, Zubaz in a tank top walking around.
Well, it's also 30 degrees outside.
Well, there's that. But there's people that would wear athletic wear regardless.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy that part of it. I think you lose so much. You know, the biggest disappointment of my life was the first time I went into a casino. And
it wasn't Ocean's 11.
Yeah, it wasn't James Bond. There wasn't men in nice suits. There was
80-year-olds in track suits.
Right, sitting in front of slot machines, smoking with one hand and pulling on the lever. And now they don't even let... They've ruined casinos for me because they don't do the clinging anymore. Now everything goes on a card. Mm. And all, if you win, it goes on your card. If you lose, it comes off your card. There's no more of that classic tinging that came with every casino.
Well, and they've gotten rid of the arms, too, haven't they? You just press a button now.
Well, it's always been a choice of arm or button.
Oh, okay.
And I think now they have totally got rid of all the arms. But they're ruining everything in life. So anytime I see something like this, it's a throwback. I really enjoy the concept. I like the feel of this. But I thought that was a very cool little end there.
Well, and one thing I do want to point out, too, if it's something that you're interested in, they actually have locker memberships as well. And this is kind of how the phone number gets out, is that if you're a locker member, you obviously know what it is whenever it gets updated, but you also have access, usually through like a thumbprint scanner or something like that. You can go in a side door. But they do have humidified lockers that you can store. You know, unlike a regular cigar shop, you're probably not storing alcohol in there, but you know, they've got a pretty extensive cigar menu, and you don't have to buy your cigars there in order to smoke them there. And they, at least the one in Atlanta, didn't charge a cut fee.
Well, it's an interesting concept, which I'm not a fan of bringing your own cigars to the cigar shop anyway. We've talked about that ad nauseum.
True, but this is a little bit different setup. This is not really a cigar shop. Yeah, exactly. And when you know that you're getting, you know, 4x markup on the cigars, it's kind of hard not to bring your own cigar, especially when you know it's going to be $22 for a Perdomo Champagne.
Well, speaking of good cigars, let's cover a couple of new cigars coming out.
All right, yeah, we've got a couple of new releases this week to highlight. Which one do you want to start with?
So the Surrogate or Surrogates?
I've heard both.
I have. It's kind of like the Coalition. Do we pronounce it Coalition or Coalition?
It depends how pretentious you are, I think. So we'll call it the Surrogates.
So the Surrogates, AKC, is debuting last week. This is an article from last week. The A's KC is a nod to Don Welsh's dog, Kenji, who passed away earlier this year. And Surrogate has always had this kind of fascination and link with dogs. You know, you have the Bone Crusher and the Animal Cracker, and you have all, you know, Surrogate really gets into their naming convention in this move.
Right.
I don't know why Sean had his foot up around his ear right then. You know, but
he's cleaning by yoga. But it's supposed to be a full-bodied cigar with a Mexican San Andreas wrapper, so I know you're going to be all over this.
You know, I love the Surrogate stuff. I love the Animal Cracker. I love the Bone Crusher. I really have enjoyed everything Surrogate's made. So this AKC is right up my alley. I'm a dog person. It's a 5x55, $10 a stick. It's produced at the My Father's Factor in Esteli.
Which is always a good sign for both of us. One of the things that I like about this article, and this is from Half Wheel, is that the cigar is intentionally designed to poke fun at the Surrogate's own brand. Because, as you know, being a fan of the brand, they always release their cigars in somewhat limited quantities, even though they're regular production lines. This one, however, is actually going to be a limited production run.
Yeah, and, you know, Pete Johnson, he's already into this because Surrogate and Tatuaje are linked together. And a lot of Pete Johnson's palate I really like when I'm in the mood for a real heavy cigar.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to be in the mood for a heavy, heavy cigar to do that. But really enjoy this. Also, speaking of the My Father Factory.
Yeah, this one I'm a little dubious on. So we talked very highly about the La Promesa when it came out as being the best cigar that has ever come out of that factory. And I stand by that. I've had a couple since, and I still really love that cigar. But they're offering it now in a Lancero.
So the defining characteristic of a Lancero is whatever the wrapper is, the cigar becomes.
Well, and the theory behind that is that most of the flavor you get out of any cigar, it comes from the wrapper. So you're at least the lion's share of it. So why the cigar nerds love the Lanceros is because you feel like you get a more true appreciation for what they were trying to accomplish and really getting the flavor of the wrapper. You and I both agree, though, that this didn't really feel like a wrapper-heavy flavored cigar.
No, you know, some cigars, you smoke them, and you know the wrapper is a key element. You know, this the Tatasha that I'm smoking right now.
Tashka
that I'm smoking right now. It's a San Andreas wrapper, and you can tell it.
Mm.
I mean, there's a lot of the flavor I'm getting off of this cigar is definitely coming straight from that San Andreas wrapper. So, and too much San Andreas, I give you the Buckeye Land, can really take away from the cigar.
Right.
And when I smoke the La Promesa, it feels really well balanced. So is this going to throw it out of balance?
Well, for me, the problem with Lanceros is always the draw. I can pretty much guarantee that if I've had a problem with a cigar that's draw-related, with 80% of the time, it's because I'm smoking a Lancero.
Right.
I have the hard, and you know, it's a hard cigar to roll. I'm not trying to disparage any of the people who are tasked with making this cigar. It's difficult, but I just feel like every time I try and smoke a Lancero, I end up having to just really draw hard and not really get much as a result.
Well, I've had some really good Lanceros. The Rocky 20th in the Lancero, that really makes that cigar sing. The Rocky 20th by itself in the regular sizes is good, but it's really at its best in the Lancero version.
I'm going to have to take your word for that.
And we have a friend here who loves that cigar, and I always end up getting given one to me ever so often. So, and, you know, great cigar. But I'm like you. I'm not sure that the Lancero is the way to go with this
but
cigar.
But I will say, if ever I were going to give a Lancero a shot, this is the cigar that I would do it with. So if he gets them in here or if I see him out and about, I may have to pick one of these up, especially because the MSRP on them is pretty decent at $10.
Yeah, if you capture one of these in the wild, it might be worth it.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, if you're at your in-law's house and you're trying to sneak a smoke behind the woodshed, you know,
Lancero's not good for that because they last forever.
Well, that's true. So you didn't even try to sneak out and smoke one?
Mm-mm.
And are they just, is it fundamentalist or is it just, it's not done? Am I digging too deep for the podcast?
No, it's just, I mean, it's a respect thing. It's also a matter of the fact that we didn't have a whole lot of time available to it anyway. I mean, we were, you know, cooking and eating lunch, and we had a birthday party for a nephew to go to, and we had, you know, Christmas decorations. I mean, we were helping around the house, and we were constantly going to, the opportunity never really presented itself, even if I had been able and wanting to.
Very interesting. Okay, so we're about ready to step away for a break.
Well, we've got one more new new release to touch on, and we are running a little bit long. The Avo Synchro.
Oh yeah, the Tubo.
Yeah. So the Synchro Nicaragua and the Ritmo are both now being released in box press tubos. One of the things I think is so great about this is it reminds me of those old school chiclet tins. Because they're box press, the tubos on these just look so much fun to me.
Again, right, they're rectangular.
Yeah.
And but can it be, I guess a tubo can be, it can be a rectangular tube.
Yeah, I feel like it. Maybe it's just using that as name recognition, whereas there may be another more apt name for it. But you and I both really love the Synchro Nicaragua and the Ritmo. I mean, they were... That was early on in the podcast when they came out. I think we were still in the first 6 months of the show when this was released.
Yeah, the Nicaraguan I really enjoy. The Ritmo is kind of too many cooks in the kitchen, see, but I really like the Nicaragua.
I liked the Ritmo a lot more than you did.
Yeah,
I think I actually like it more than the Nicaragua.
Well, the Fogata is the king of these.
It is.
Of the Avo.
And I was really hoping that would come out as well.
Yeah, to me, the Fogata is definitely the best of these Nicaraguan blend cigars they released. But the Nicaraguan I like, and like I said, you're more impressed with the Ritmo than I am.
Yeah.
Now, how's your Viaje going for you?
My Viaje is going really well. I'm actually really enjoying this, and I'll talk more about that when we get back after the cigar under it.
Shane here with this cigar around $8.
So, you're breaking your own rules.
I am, but this is a cigar worth it. You know, I'm not going to let 89 cents stand between me and telling my listeners about a good cigar. I want to talk about the CAO Session this week.
I've heard nothing but good things about this cigar. I haven't had one yet.
I've had a couple of them. I'm going to bring you one. The wrapper is a Connecticut broadleaf. The binder is Dominican, and the filler is Nicaraguan and Dominican. This is a general cigar. This is their new offering to the market this year. And I really enjoy this cigar. The best way to describe the flavor is rich. It kind of has a rich flavor. This would not have been a bad post-turkey cigar, as we talked about earlier. Now, it is a little darker. It is a little fuller body. But I think it's deceptive. You know, some cigars are really dark, but not as strong as you would think they are when you pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really deceptive, but a great cigar. You know, 5 1/4 by 55 is $8.59 a stick. The 6x60 is $9.59. So we're pushing the limits here of the $8 cigar. But I think it's worth spending the extra $2, skip the Mountain Dew on the way home, and go ahead and spend the extra $2 on your cigar at the lounge. And try, till next week, the CAO Session. Back to the Cigar Cast. This is one of your hosts, Shane, with a man who's a reminder of a time when boy bands roamed the earth, Trey Dedmond.
I take great exception to that.
Okay, on Facebook, when you did the 10-year thing, it looked just like you were a new kid on the block
or NSYNC, we
literally, you know, working on for Christmas, getting a picture for your daughter's bedroom of like the boy band posters with your head dubbed in there would be awesome. Because you look just like you just came off tour.
That was one of those things that was really great for me, trying to do the 10-year thing, learning that I don't have many pictures from that era. Although I will say, in fairness, when that picture was taken, I was actually on a documentary film shoot at the time. I was in full-blown, like, you know, filmmaker mode, trying
full
to be
artsy.
Yeah. Well, not a bright time in my
life. Your fiance posts, and it looks exactly the same.
That's what I said.
She's not changed a hair.
I know. She has always been really good looking, and it's not fair.
Yeah, she's not changed a hair. But anyway, coming on back, let's talk about the FDA. Since I've already got you offended, let's talk about the FDA. So on Aficionado, they posted, FDA extends comment period for cigar approval rule proposal. I said that very slowly because that's something I could very easily stumble over. Basically, they're just extending this out, the comment session for people to say why we should have a premium cigar exemption. I don't know that there's a lot of the meat on the bone here. They're going to continue accepting public feedback until December 16th. But if you ain't told them what you think by now, you probably asleep at the wheel.
Well, but at the same time, is it worth yes, I've already said something else, but you guys are dragging your feet on this, and you're showing that you've got some reticence here. Like, I don't know. One of the things that really gets my ire up on this, cigar draw resistance, cigar burn rate, puff count, cigar wrapper, and cigar binder porosity are just a few of the many details that the FDA would require cigar manufacturers to submit for new blends.
And like most of this stuff, they'll be required to gather this information. They'll be required to submit it, and it'll never be read by anybody that knows what any of that means.
Right. They will set up arbitrary limits. Well, based on this size, this cigar should last longer than this, or should not last longer than this. So what does that mean about nicotine count? And da, 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 and they'll try and draw some really dubious lines as to what quality means. What possible good could having that information do the FDA?
Yeah, there's really no upside to this. I mean,
Have you ever heard cigar binder porosity ever in your life?
No, have no use for it. But we're just touching that. So let's go on to the next from the AP News.
Yeah, we've actually got a reputable source for once.
Yeah, no more menthol cigarettes. New ban on tobacco vape flavors. Boston, Massachusetts became the first stand to ban flavored tobacco and nicotine vaping products, including menthol cigarettes. So this is vaping once again.
Well, yeah, and I think I said this a couple of months ago that I saw the writing on the wall for menthols. I knew that that was going to get tied up in this. I do like that the New England Convenience Store and Energy Marketers Association. Would you have ever guessed that there was such a thing?
Both of them.
Yeah. They obviously opposed the legislation. And I love this. Public health and safety has been dealt a blow by anti-tobacco crusaders exploiting a youth vaping crisis and by lawmakers bypassing prudent policymaking. That just, if that doesn't tell you everything about this situation, it's people on a crusade to stop vaping are now attacking other tangentially or even unrelated industries.
Well, the vaping is an easy target. The vaping is such an easy target because it does make nicotine addiction palatable to children.
Yes, but anybody who has ever played a carnival game will tell you there's no prize behind the easy target. The big balloon that pops easily when you throw the dart at it has the tiny little finger puppet, and it's the one that's hard to get at is where the real prize is.
Well, and reading this article, the most interesting line in this article is the new law specifically restricts sale of these products to licensed smoking bars, such as cigar bars and hookah lounges, where they'll only be allowed to be consumed on site. That just, so now cigar lounges got to have a gorilla at the door keeping people from leaving? I mean, is that, I'm sorry, sir, you have to put that cigar out before you can walk out the door here?
Yeah.
I'm just going to my car. Well, sorry, you can't. You're going to have to leave it here with me.
Now, I don't know if we mentioned this at the top of the article or not, but this is specifically Massachusetts legislation. This is not a national thing. But it is interesting because I was in the area just a couple of months ago or just a month ago, really. And yeah, I can tell you, I saw people walking up and down the sidewalk smoking all the time. And you've got to believe that most of that is probably menthol because menthol makes up the majority of cigarette sales. you know, we went to a cigar. I was told that I could have smoked walking down the sidewalk had I wanted to, but I just, there was really no reason or need to. You know, I could only imagine having to pop into a little bodega that happens to be one of the few licensed places to still do. It just seems unnecessarily limiting.
Yeah, the whole thing seems ridiculous, and it to be consumed on site seems to me to be a stupid rule. Because if I wanted to have a flavored cigar on my back porch, the police gonna come kick down the door, you know, carry me out in cuffs.
And this is where, you know, we've talked to a couple of shop owners over the course of the last few months, you know, talking about the banning of online cigar sales and how a lot of brick and mortar retailers tend to be in favor of that. But at the same time, if you're the type of person who wants, you know, flavored cigars or menthol cigarettes, and you live in a state that has draconian regulations and laws in place to prevent, your only option now is to get it online. But now that's going to go away too.
Well, and this brings us to our next article, because I think this is an illustration.
One thing before we move on, I just wanted to point this out, because this is where
you just
this
wrecked that transition, man. It was going so well.
Well,
and
that's
you
why you've got to watch. I had the finger up. I was giving you the high sign.
You give me the finger so often during this
different
podcast.
Finger. It was because this is where this becomes criminal. It places a 75% excise tax on nicotine vaping products and gives public health officials new authority to regulate products and requires health insurers cover tobacco cessation counseling. So not only are they costing people more money, but they're also backdooring the ability for them to take more money in the future.
Sure. And to tell people how to live their life. It comes down to. So, but is an unintended consequence of this going to be, from newsdescription.com, alcohol-infused cigar market is expected to experience a swift development by 2027.
I don't know that I agree with this article, because we started to see this happen about 5 years ago. Dragon's Milk is the one that comes to mind. The Perdomo Craft Series, not the one that they currently release, but they did a barrel-aged, I'm sorry. We started to see a lot of barrel-aged and bourbon-infused cigars hit the market.
Well, now, to me, that's two totally different categories. Barrel-aged versus bourbon-infused. One, you're just aging it in the barrel where the bourbon was. The other, you're actually infusing the cigar with the...
True, but just like when you age beer in a bourbon barrel, you leave a little of the bourbon in the... They do the same thing when they age cigars in that way. So you do get an infusion of that flavor.
I don't see those cigars being anything that regular smoker, you know, when we're sitting here in the shop, people walk up to us all the time. Hey, have you tried the new X? Have you tried the new Y? It's never, hey, have you ever tried a cognac infused, you know, CAO Gold?
Well, but my point is that there were a couple of manufacturers recently that tried this as recently as about 5 years ago, to my recollection. And no one bought them because they weren't any good, so they fell off. So I really don't know that I agree that that's going to be where the market goes.
But if you want a cigar that is not tobacco flavored, and you're going and you don't have the accessibility of the acids and the Tatianas and all of those type, is that going to increase this type of consumption?
But does this not fall under a flavored cigar?
Well, that's the question. You know, this is talking about is if they're separate characters. And in all the articles, and we've probably read 200 articles about the new rules and regulations, and not one of them have they mentioned alcohol-infused cigars, because, of course, the government don't touch alcohol. Alcohol is the golden calf. They don't want to risk doing anything that might damage their ability to regulate and tax alcohol, because, of course, you know, kids never drink. They only smoke and vape.
Right.
So this is a loophole that could become a problem.
It could, but if this article is right and we do see an explosion in this area while the commenting period and while the FDA is still bandying about all, if this happens too soon, they'll close the loophole.
True. Very true. But it's interesting. I wonder if it's going to be an unintended consequence, because most of the time your cigars that are infused, you don't infuse good tobacco. It makes no point. You know, it's like you don't you know, inject and rub and brine a really good turkey. You know, you take, going back to our Thanksgiving conversation, you don't want to season your turkey to death. When I make deer jerky, so many people make deer jerky and just season it to death. You can't even tell if it was deer, ostrich, or, you know, rabbit, because they've put so much Worcestershire garlic and everything else in it. So I'm wondering if this is going to be an outlet for some of the bad tobacco that normally would get used in infused cigars.
All right, on a happier note, do you have $4.5 million laying around?
I left it in my other pants.
Well, it's going to be a shame because you're going to want to head down to Tampa.
Yeah, this is a great article. Now, this is interesting because, okay, this is in Tampa. The cigar factory with the iconic clock tower is for sale for $4.5 million. And just looking at the picture here, it looks like it's in pretty good shape.
It does. It looks, I mean, you can tell that it's been well taken care of even since being abandoned for the purpose of rolling cigars. And it's a beautiful building. It looks like it was just sold at the beginning of the year for $3.3 million, and now they're trying to turn around and make a quick 1.2 off the sale of this building.
Sure. And it's 60,000 square foot at 2301 North Albany Avenue. So $4.5 million for 60,000 square foot, that seems like a bargain to me. You know, when you talk
so
about
that.
So
you mentioned this before
that.
The show, and I'm curious why that is.
So 60,000 square foot. So you think about building houses in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And all you build houses for $160 a square foot. So if you take, I'm going to pull up my calculator here. If you take $160 a foot, now this is commercial, so commercial is probably going to be $200 or $300 a square foot, but let's just use a house number. $160 a foot times 60,000 square feet. Whoop, not 600. 60,000 square feet. $9.6 million. So this is half that.
Yeah.
This is like $80 a foot.
But the question becomes, and this is kind of why I wanted to touch on this article, because the question becomes, what can you do with it? I mean, we talked about another factory in Tampa that's being revitalized as a boutique hotel. So what, you know, it's obviously part of the legacy and the history of the city. But if you are looking at spending $3.5 million on an old cigar factory, to what purpose? And do you, is there really a market for converting it into something that's then sellable or marketable as something else?
Oh, yeah. There's always a market for commercial space. There's always going to be a market for, and the further you divide it up, the easier it becomes to market. The problem is, I know why this is so cheap. Because the Tampa Historical Committee is going to crawl on your back and ride you from the day you buy this sucker till the day you sell it.
But I would argue this. Do you really blame them?
Yes.
Well, look at the first picture in the article. This beautiful red brick building still has some of the original awnings. It looks like it has some of the original glass still. Don't know if the clock tower still works, but that would be easy
it
enough
does
to
not.
Repair. Okay. Beautiful three-story building. And then you look down about midway through the article and you see where he's painted this thing white. And it's ugly. He has made it...
That's a different building, but go ahead.
But that's what this article is about, is that him wanting to paint and otherwise change the structure. Why buy a building with historic significance and beautiful architecture if you're just going to cover it up or ruin it?
If you buy the building, it's your building. If they want to decide what's going to happen to this building, then the city of Tampa needs to buck up and buy it.
Well, and that's part of the problem, too, is the fact that the only person who can request historical designation for a building is the person who owns it.
Right.
So if he doesn't want it, but the problem is, look around Nashville. We've been seeing this for the last 10 years. Beautiful old buildings that get torn down and replaced with tall skinnies.
Right.
And it's just ruined the landscape. It's ruined the aesthetic of these neighborhoods. And it's
changed it. I don't think it has ruined it.
I think in some cases it has.
And I'm very pro-development. In my opinion, when you as the developer take the chance, when you as the developer decide you're going to sign on the dotted line, and you're going to try to make money off of it, nobody else should be able to tell you what you do.
True, but it, I mean, and I get that to a certain extent. However, think about what would have happened if European cities took the same flippant attitude towards preservation of history that we do in this country. You
okay.
know, all of the beautiful historic buildings going back to before Christ roamed the earth would be gone. We would have none of that. So you have to have these historical preservation societies because you've got greedy developers who will come in and tear down historic pieces of cities just in the name of the almighty dollar.
Then the historic preservation societies should make their case to the public at large and get the funds to buy these and redesign them.
And that's what they're trying to do.
No, in this one, they're just that's why he's cut it down to so low to $4.5 million for 60,000 square foot. Is because you know if you buy this thing, you know, Green Hills here in Nashville is a perfect example. I will not draw in Green Hills. I turn them down all the time because the Historical Society in Green Hills is the biggest pain in the neck that ever was. And they're trying to exert their influence over somebody trying to make a living. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd and ridiculous.
So if we had it your way, then every 30 years, the city would be completely new from the ground up.
Awesome.
You're such a...
awesome. New, safe. I mean, it's not like we don't already spend twice what it costs to build a building because they're concerned that a rogue earthquake may come through once every 175,000 years and knock something down.
Yeah, but you're talking about different...
I mean, right now, they're planning to enforce codes in the southeast that will cause mold issues. I mean, it's going to be your business is going to boom for the next 10 years because they're trying to enforce the same codes in Columbia, Tennessee, that they enforce in Vail, Colorado.
Yeah, no,
we have experts testify to this, but the city is too lazy. And in this case, the historic committee is too lazy to make their case to enough investors and have enough decency to get the support behind them to buy these buildings. So to me, once they sell these buildings, hands off. But anyway.
I thought that article was supposed to be a palate cleanser.
It was, but you got me up on my soapbox because there's so much anti-development, and development is good. Development drives a lot of stuff. And believe me, if there's a profit to be made by developers for this to be kept in this style, they'll keep it in the style. It'll be cheaper to do it anyway. But nobody should be told what they have to do with their own property. It should not be made that way. Okay, so let's try this palate cleanser thing again. Let's talk about an accessory, yeah. Something we can both agree on.
So we have talked before about the Zycar Ultramag lighter that comes in a set with a very slim double guillotine cutter that actually attaches to the back of the lighter magnetically, so it kind of becomes one unit. Well, Zycar is actually updating the slim cutter for practical reason? I'm not sure, but we both decided it was pretty cool. They've got ring gauge measurements on the blade now.
So this is something that's really a cool idea so that you can kind of measure, which... I've never had the need to do that because it's printed on every cigar I smoke. And by the same token, I think I can grab a cigar and pretty accurately tell you what the ring gauge is.
Within two.
I can pretty easily tell you that. And most cigars are only going to run up to 60, but I do like the slim cutter. I like the slim design. I like the streamlined shape of it. The attaching it to a lighter means nothing to me. I just like the design of the Zycar Slim.
Yeah, I do too. And I've used one, and I think it's a really great, well-designed cutter. I've got to say, I mean, unlike you, the actual, like, the magnetic attachment of having, you know, both of them together and no chance for leaving one of them behind, and I think that's great. If I were ever going to spend money on a Zycar, it would be the Ultra Mag lighter with the Ultra Slim cutter attachment.
Yeah, this is a cool idea. This is something cool that Zycar has done, and it's worth mentioning. And all this comes from Cigar Journal. Actually, we was looking at another ad in Cigar Journal and decided we liked this article better. So
that really would have been a contentious second half of the show, coming off the heels of that Tampa article.
Then we could have really gotten into a good argument. Yeah. We'll save the arguments for a later show. Give me a judgment on the Viaje.
You know, I didn't have any expectations going into the cigar, and it's unusual. You know, usually you have some preconceived notions based on the blend or who makes it, and I really didn't. And I've got to tell you, it's a 5.5. It's a really, really good cigar.
It's interesting that you talk about preconceived notions, because I was almost another choice I had, because I was thinking about it coming up here, of, well, you know, I probably should smoke a Highclere Castle. I haven't smoked one of those. But I just was not in the mood for a Foundation cigar. And all, because with the exception of the Charter Oak, Foundation doesn't hit my palate right.
Yeah, I almost grabbed the new Tabernacle Havana Seed because I haven't had one of those yet.
Yep, and it's just, so I really want to give that cigar a fighting chance.
And so you're waiting for the day that you're in the mood for a Charter Oak, but are willing to spend 3 times as much?
I guess
twice as much.
I guess I'm waiting for a day that I won't taste pretentiousness when I light it. So I guess that's what I'm waiting for, and I don't know if that, but I was pondering it because it was a thought process on the way up here, is can I give this cigar a fair judgment tonight on the show in the mood that I'm in? And the answer was no. I'm, you know, to thine own self be true. I knew I was not in a headspace where I was going to give the Highclere Castle a fair shake, so I decided not to get it. So I'm glad to see you grabbed something a little off the beaten path and are still willing to embrace it as a better cigar.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I don't know that it's worth the $13 price tag, but at $11, I'd say it was worth it. So it's just right on the line of being good enough. But that being said, even taking, you know, value per dollar into account, I'm still at that 5.5, almost 6 mark.
So the Tashka, I really like. I like this cigar.
I'm a big fan of it too.
It's a 5.5 for me. It's not a 6 or a 7. It's definitely in the 5.5, 5.75 range. What I wish I was getting out of this cigar that I'm not is a little more complexity. I would like, you know, it's got a lot of strength for the sake of strength, and it's definitely Nicaraguan tobacco and the San Andreas, and it's kind of a boilerplate cigar that, you know, you could go order off of any floor. So that's why it gets kind of a lower score for me, is it doesn't have the depth to it that I really would, we're never getting Charles on the show now, that I would really like it to have. But it is a very good cigar. You know, the price point's a little high for the size of cigar for me. I think it's $14, so it's a little high for the size of cigar that it actually is.
Yeah.
But I love Charles. I love the fact that he's set up this company from scratch, that he's bringing it up, you know, that he's out there, he's beating the pavement, he's doing the work. I mean, he's the hardest working man in the cigar business.
Right.
And Charles Robinson, founder of At Sneaky Cigars. I like his story. I like everything about him, and I like his cigar. I'm a little underwhelmed for the price of the cigar, but I think part of that is the fact that he is a new company and it is such a limited production run.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. Well, after this episode, I'm going to assume we're going to have a 148 if we haven't chewed each other's head off by next week. In the meantime, we're going to wrap up this week and head. Wow.
You lost it.
I just completely, the you wheels just fell off. I told you I should have had coffee before we started recording. In the meantime, get a hold of us via email at info@thecigarcast.com, facebook.com/thecigarcast, and Instagram and Twitter @thecigarcast. Bring us home, Shane.
Well, thanks everybody for listening tonight. And until next week, have a great cigar and think well of us. Mm-hmm.